Brian. Konnichiwa, Brian. Speak Japanese? So happy to be here on the podcast with you in the 31st floor of the Shinjuku Hotel that we're staying in. What just happened, dude? We got Colt and Stu zipping up packages here. They're leaving the studio because they're gonna. What are you guys gonna do? You gonna go for a walk? Enjoy some. Yeah. When was the last time you were outside in fresh air?
That was 52 hours ago.
Yeah, I went 39 hours with no oxygen. Sam Shepard in the movie Moon. I don't know if you saw that. Searching for long range comms. Anyway, Brian, we're going to talk about oxygen, actually, aren't we?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, I got a lot of feedback. Hanging on. All right, we're back. I've installed the new XLR cable. Man, I mean, I was going to try to do just a pod with you, but I feel like you and I need to basically wrap up what the hell just happened.
Yeah.
What just happened?
Debrief on the past 2 days, yeah.
Let's do it together. First of all, I'm just so happy to be... It was a bit stressful for me to host that thing.
You handled it well.
Thank you.
Yeah, you handled it well. I think the way in which the USGA kind of set this up was golf doesn't look the same to everybody.
Right.
And I think you brought that perspective well with the videos. And so, yeah, I was pretty cool about it.
Brian, first of all, Brian's referring to these videos I made for the USGA, the team and I. But you're probably wondering, who's Brian? Who is Brian? Brian, I'm going to fix your mic. First of all, before we tell you, there you go. Brian, who are you? You're from Minnesota and you love golf.
I do love golf. Yeah, I don't love golf for the playing golf. I love the walk.
You don't actually play golf or what?
I do.
Oh,
But I don't love golf because of the competition of golf. I love golf because the ability to be outside. I grew up mowing greens on a golf course. And so that early morning at 5 a.m., the deer cruising across the fairway, you turn the mower off, sun's starting to come up, and then you just have nature.
I'm hearing feedback. Okay, hang on.
All right, I think we have finally fixed the feedback issue. I've rerouted all the little XLR cables here in this Japanese hotel room.
There's nothing touching anymore.
There's nothing touching. Now we're on different channels. So if you're listening to headphones, probably was a very strange experience to have the stereo feed flip. And maybe you're insane. But Brian was telling us all, you and me, about how you enjoy the walk.
I do enjoy the walk. That kind of is my connection. I enjoy the nature. I enjoy the walk. I enjoy the green grass. I enjoy the smell of it.
But you're... can't explain to the people listening. If you're listening, I cannot explain to you what the experience is right now. We were basically in a think tank with down in it for days.
Incubator, yes. Incubator. Yeah. The ideas that were being thrown out and the things that people are trying globally to support golf. And I'm going to stay away from the word game because we were just told that at the very end here as we were digesting the whole 2 days, you know, the game of golf. Let's just talk about it as golf.
Right.
We were incubating on just some really amazing ideas.
Originally, I met Brian in the lobby of the USGA Innovation Symposium. This is the fifth one. And we started talking, and I think probably two sentences into your words, I said, hang on, let's do a podcast. And this was yesterday. And I think, you know, a lot of you probably are aware that there are about a dozen podcasts recorded that are sitting in a vault for a rainy day. Obviously, we've done some with Cheyenne Woods, other great thinkers in the golf space that are just sort of waiting. And so I thought Brian and I were going to come here and do a podcast about your work, which is why you were brought here. And I do want to do that, but I also really do want to take the time with you to just like decompress as a friend, as a colleague. Right? I mean, we don't know each other really, but you're from Minnesota.
Like, yeah, I'm from Minnesota. Yeah,
and that's nice.
It is Minnesota nice. Very. Yeah. You betcha.
Yeah, you betcha. So I guess by way of introduction, everybody listening probably wants to know who Brian is.
Yeah.
And would you mind introducing yourself?
So I'm Brian Horgan. I'm a professor at the University of Minnesota. Work in the Department of Horticultural Science, and I study turf grass. So, okay, guys, I see the look. Yeah, the look is good.
No, the look is just, I'm still relieved to be done. Not that it was painful, but it was just a lot.
Well, the expectations on you were different.
Well, we don't need to unpack that. Okay. We can do it at the bar.
It sounds like you might need it.
Yeah, I might. But turf grass is something that all golfers love.
All green grass golfers love it. Yeah.
Ooh, what is the distinction you just made?
Oh, come on, seriously? The whole idea of those that don't participate in golf on a course where the grass is growing.
But, I mean, every golfer loves grass.
Yeah.
Even if it's just a concept to them.
Well, we just saw today about in France, the short courses that are all made up of artificial turf.
Yeah.
So that would be a non-green grass golf course.
Right. More feedback.
I just heard it.
I'm gonna focus on mentally not having feedback. You said some things that immediately struck me. And it was the idea, basically, I mean, do you think about Malcolm Gladwell?
At points, I do.
So, obviously, I am not... the full story is Malcolm Gladwell did a podcast. I believe the name of the podcast is Revisionist History.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the first episode of the second season. And he basically bashes golf, saying that there's the only benefit is for golfers and they're private and they're using a tax loophole, yada, yada, yada. He later admitted, and I've talked about this many times on the pod, he later admitted on another podcast, Jeff Shackelford, that he was employing a tactic, clickbait, right? And that's all fine, but we're now here to, Brian, I invited on the podcast for, you know, the initial inspiration was to point in the other direction so that environmentalists could potentially look at the game of golf in a more compelling way.
Yeah, it's a community connection, and that's kind of where I'm going with this now. I love the research that we're doing around the value of the asset, which is a golf course. And that value exists other than for recreational value. So how do we describe that? How do we build capacity around that? And that's ultimately where we're at right now. So golf courses are of greater value than just being there for recreation. And how do we tell that story?
As a golfer.
What do you mean as a golfer?
A golfer has a benefit to non-golfers.
A non-golfer receives greater benefit than just being, than just the golf course being there for the golfer.
I think I may have said that wrong. I don't know what I just said, but yeah. A golf course has a innate benefit to non-golfers.
Correct.
Right. And that I don't understand.
Yeah. So, so golf courses are cooling mechanisms. Golf courses are big stormwater retention areas. Golf courses recharge aquifers. Golf courses are 150 acres of continuous green space that make up large urban green spaces in city centers. Golf courses sequester carbon. Golf courses abate noise. Golf courses.
Oh, I never thought about that.
Yeah, golf courses are help to control dust and air pollution. So those things are fascinating to think about, and a non-golfer will recognize those values if you display it without using the word golf.
Right. So instead of being like, here's an 18-hole course that you have to pay to use.
You lost him when you said 18-hole course.
Right. So what do you say?
It's urban green space.
Whoa.
It has nothing to do with golf. But golf is the mechanism that we're studying because we have to find ways to describe the product differently.
But isn't part of this, the problem is that with golf courses themselves, they're only allowing golf to be executed on their grounds?
Sure. I mean, from an asset management perspective or an asset utilization perspective, it's an underutilized asset. At no point in time is the capacity of that facility being utilized to its maximum amount.
Ever.
No.
Why? What would that look like if it was?
You would have golf being played all day, all the time.
Honestly?
Mm-hmm.
I'm in.
Yeah. I mean, that would be a utilized asset. But there's always gaps in time. There's always, you know, there's always tea times that from Tuesday from 1 to 4 o'clock in the afternoon, nothing goes on out there.
That's interesting. Why don't they just make it free golf at that point?
Perfect. Make it free golf, or make it that's where you bring your community in.
Yeah, that's so strange.
There's the same with the driving range. But people love to talk about their driving ranges making so much money. But you drive by it, and there's one guy out there. So what could that driving range be? Well, that's your three-hole loop for your kids program. Shut it down. I mean, what other sport and venue is available literally in the summer, 14 hours a day, for when you want to go use it at your discretion?
That's a really good point. I mean, if you're only going to pay $10 for a bucket or $5, and you're freaking out that they're closed because there's kids playing golf, like,
go find some other place to go.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Make some competition.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's
yeah.
a really, or like, why isn't there a driving range with a restaurant underneath it? I mean, well, I guess I wouldn't want to have the roof with balls being hit on it, but you're right. Like, look, can we come up with an alternative use for a driving range that allows?
We could sit here every day of the week and look at a newspaper or listen to the news or talk to your friends and come up with a dozen ideas every day of what that golf course could be used and how it could be used differently. I'm not saying get away from golf by any means.
Oh, in addition,
I'm just saying that there are things that we could do on 150 acres in the middle of a city when that asset's not being fully utilized.
Yeah, it's like packing your suitcase with a little tiny bottle of cologne.
I'm not sure.
There's a lot of room in there.
Oh, yeah.
You put a lot of stuff in there. I'm tired.
Yeah.
But like, so how did you come into this? How did you, when did this become the question that you're going to spend this portion of your life answering?
4 years ago, we embarked on an idea and a concept to build Golf Lab. Golf Lab was a concept that we were going to take over the University of Minnesota's golf course, and we were going to retrofit it into an innovation center that drove the industry into the future, the industry of golf. And so all of the different ideas we heard about these last day and a half were going to be all in one spot. People could come see it, touch it, feel it, play it, and learn how to program it. And so as we were building this idea around Golf Lab, the USGA and the University of Minnesota formed a formal research partnership. And I had a list of different ideas and concepts that I wanted to study. And the natural capital value of urban green spaces as golf courses was one of the priority spots that I wanted to study. So 3 years ago, when our partnership was ongoing or had just gotten going, we started this. We found the right people. We found the right team. We're surrounded by really freaking smart people, and they're running with it. We're running with it.
And so, what an opportunity!
Oh. Everything came into play and into place at such an opportune time. And I really do believe that through this work and through the partnership with USGA, that we will find and identify, first of all, a dozen more questions that we're going to want to answer. But we're going to solve something here, and we're going to change the dialogue and the communication for those that really are critical of that facility being used for that four-letter word.
Are people really critical?
Absolutely.
What do they say?
Well, why do you have to water that? You're putting all the pesticides down on there? I don't want my kid out there. They're going to get sick. I don't drive by golf courses because there's stuff in the air. Why is that land being utilized? How controversial can we get here?
As much as you want.
Why is that land being utilized for the white guy that's privileged and has a shit ton of money? It can be used for so many other things. So controversy exists in golf, and I'm trying to reposition, this project is trying to reposition it as value, not as something that people just point fingers at.
Well, it seems like one of the things that would help reposition without changing much is obviously, and this is something that I'm pretty sure everyone who's listening and anyone would really agree, opening the gates, making the game more accessible for everybody, decreasing the amount of what Ben Warren called silly rules, I believe, or something, some mm-hmm. really funny way he had of describing the rules of golf. Not the rules of golf, but the etiquette of golf that's a bit intense, that's hard to learn and turns people off. I mean, opening that up, that doesn't really solve the problem you're looking at.
Well, what Benjamin's focused on or thinking about is the inclusivity and trying to break down barriers to access golf. I'm really trying not to worry about whether it's about golf. The pollinator habitat and the potential with the huge global issue we're having with pollinator habitat, we have identified that golf courses are a great foraging ground for pollinators. And pollinators travel. So there's an area of influence that exists around a golf course that pollinators go out to, do their thing, and then they come back.
A pollinator is a bee?
A bee, butterfly, yeah. Insects that actually pollinate plants.
Yeah. Got it. I never heard it called that.
What?
A pollinator.
Well, there's different pollinators.
Right, but I get. I'm just making sure because I'm assuming I am.
No, you're good. Yeah. You're good. So this idea that the habitat exists, I look at it this way. There's four walls that exist around a golf course. It's contained. Its value is contained because no one who doesn't participate in golf ever go onto that property.
Right.
So now let's change it from contained to blended. The example I'll use is with bees. The golf course is really proud of the fact that they're growing a bee. They have an active bee colony, and they're making honey. And the honey is used by the kitchen to make really good muffins. The value of the bees is contained within the club because it's used for the members. The pollinators themselves, the bees, they don't just make honey. They go out and do their thing too. And they go out and blend into the community. So by just changing the dialogue that my golf course is a habitat for pollinators, changes it from contained for just the membership to then the community receiving value from it. What's even better is if it's not just blended, it's engaged, where the community looks to the golf course and says, gosh, you guys are a really good habitat for bees. Can we do more so that we can increase the pollinator habitat for our entire community? So we go from contained to blended to engaged in a service. And that service is around pollinator habitat.
So what's the ideal mixed use community benefiting scenario? I mean, you must have come up with like the ultimate sweet spot.
Well, water is where we're at right now. I mean, the focus, it's been great to look at the urban heat island effect, and it's been great to look at the pollinator, but it's about water where we have driven most of our research around this natural capital idea. Whether you're a golf course is the biggest rain garden for the community. We've heard that term used before.
I don't know what that is.
Rain garden is a place that accepts water and keeps it from going into the street instead of it going in the street in the sewer and then being treated or discharged into some lake.
Because the street, it gets dirty?
Because then it's a waste. It's a loss.
Because it goes in the sewer and...
And then it gets discharged some other spot. So in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis, Minneapolis and St. Paul, everything is connected with gutter systems, sewer gutter systems. And so water that goes in the street goes in the gutter, and then it gets eventually into the Mississippi River, then it's in the Gulf of Mexico.
Really?
So it's then a loss.
So is the Mississippi River just filled with dirt?
No.
Like soup cans and soda bottles and stuff?
Is there
a filter? Because I'm just thinking of litter. Like, isn't there litter on the street and then it just kind of goes into the sewer and it's just sort of like a strainer?
That's a very interesting perception. I don't know.
I live in Los Angeles.
Yeah, we don't have that issue of litter.
You're clean up there.
Yeah.
Both, both like as how you live. And anyway, but the rain garden, so
water flows into a property, or water that lands on the property stays on the property. And when I say stay on the property, there's water features, but then there's also soil. And the soil is like a big gas tank. We heard about that from Dana Lawn, our Toro friend, talking about the fuel gauge of soil. You know, soils can accept so much water. And how do you know that? Well, you know that through sensors and technology.
Yeah.
I digress. Water hits a property and can go into the soil. And eventually, once it gets down beyond plant roots, it then continues to migrate down and it can recharge aquifers.
Whoa.
So now you are recharging what is being pulled and used for consumer use, water. We are now figuring out ways to direct water onto golf facilities so that we can have value as an aquifer recharger.
So what you're talking about, you're not talking about water usage. You're talking about...
mostly filtration and cleaner water.
Jeez.
Yeah. So an example...
I mean, this is blowing my mind.
You know, surrounding a golf course, there's sub-watersheds, you know, places where water moves from point A to point B. If it's possible for us to direct water from point A to point B, where B is on the golf course and A is not, now I'm doing a public utility service because I'm not driving that water from point A into a street where it has to be routed through sewers that are infrastructure that require replacement over time. I'm driving water into a biological system, filtering it through a soil and letting it go down into the aquifer.
That seems like a relatively small benefit. I'm just asking. I'm curious.
The fact that we're recharging aquifers with water that goes through a golf course?
I'm not arguing. I'm literally saying I don't know. Because I guess I'm saying, like, how long would it take for a golf course, right, is really expensive.
Okay.
How long would it take for it to return that burden? You know what I mean?
The burden being that the golf course has to be designed such to accept water.
Well, I didn't even think of that. But what I was thinking, I'm like not on your level. I get there's so much okay. I need to. I should do research. But what I mean is like, I'm just saying like the benefit of not putting water in the sewer to be, to
route the water away.
Yeah, the benefit of not having the water go in the sewer to avoid needing to replace that system.
Okay, got your point.
Yeah.
And you're right. You know, the replacement cost of that infrastructure is probably not impacted by that 10 million gallons that's coming from that one sub-watershed.
A lot of gallons, first of all.
Well,
but you're saying that there's way... That's one of the smaller benefits of having a place for the water to go.
Well, yeah. And so just take your point right there. 10 million gallons is a lot. And the average golf course in Minnesota uses 25 million gallons.
A year?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
how much is 25 million gallons? What does that look like? Do you know? Is it like one of those water reservoirs? Like the what do they call those things?
It's not that big. It's not that much.
Oh.
It is, but it's not. Okay, so.
I'm talking about the one that's like made out of metal. That's got the town's name on it. You know what I mean? Welcome to... whatever.
Yeah, the water tower.
Yeah, water tower. Yeah. Did you?
You are lost.
It took you a second.
Yeah, because my mind's not there either.
We're a bit fried.
Yeah.
Water tower, how many gallons is that?
Don't know.
It can't be 25,000.
No.
It's got to be a couple thousand.
No, it's got to be more than that because it's capacity for a city.
Wow, maybe.
You know what a water tower is used for and why they're built?
No.
For fire.
No way. Mm-hmm. Oh, in case the plumbing goes down, mm-hmm. they've got gravity to pump.
Mm-hmm. So that you have access, you always will have access to water in case there's a fire.
So it's not for drinking?
Well, I mean, it's certainly for drinking, but the storage and the reason it stays full and is in your storing water is for the fire protection.
I love those water towers. They're really beautiful.
Yeah.
So what else on the list of other positive attributes?
Let's just stay with this 25 million thing for a second. So I will buy and agree with you that the public infrastructure benefit is probably minimal and really long term. But let's go back to the idea that if I can accept 10 million gallons onto my property from a sub watershed that exists outside of the golf course, and that's a third or 40% of the overall water use that I need to pull from an aquifer, look at that value add. Right. Now I can recycle, reuse that water on a facility that's not sending that water out.
To get treated.
Mm-hmm. And let that be my source of irrigation water.
Well, and I thought part of the water discussion, I thought when you said water, I thought the discussion was using water artificially. And no. That's not what you're talking about. You're talking about rainwater. I mean, the artificial water discussion must not really factor in.
And when you say artificial, what do you mean?
Palm Springs gets a lot of any golf course in the desert, right? They're putting a lot of strain on water.
Yeah, they're pulling water out.
There can't be a positive attribute to that.
To irrigate a golf course?
Yeah.
Well, there is.
Really?
That's the trade-off.
What is it?
So when we were talking today about Invest, that model, and one of the letters in there is T, and that's for trade-offs. Okay, so I irrigate my grass. The grass grows. Growing grass is sequestering carbon. I'm pulling carbon from the atmosphere because I'm irrigating my grass. Value add is, and the trade-off is, I'm using a resource to sequester more carbon. What's of greater value at that point? In the desert, the water is of greater demand than the carbon sequestration need. But right. If I have excess capacity and all I needed of water, and to continue to irrigate my golf course allows me to sequester more carbon, now I don't have that same trade-off.
Right.
Do I get you?
No, that makes sense. I'm just going to the next question, which is basically, so at what point could you potentially say that a golf course that breaks even, well, I guess that would be an easy one. A golf course that breaks even is essentially a wonderful investment for the community.
Sure, absolutely. And I would even argue that a golf course that loses some money is still of great value to the community because of all of these services that that golf course is providing that aren't being discussed yet.
So then, I guess, how do you feel about golf courses that make a lot of money?
It's great.
Well, to me, now I'm almost feeling like that's inappropriate. Like, you shouldn't make a lot of money. Like, you should merely, if you're, I mean, obviously.
Depends on what you're doing with that money. What are you doing with the money?
Ooh, there you go. That's a good question.
I mean, if a golf course is making a bunch of money and they're storing it away and then they're using it to make sure that they're staying competitive in the market.
Right.
And they're investing in technology and innovation and they're looking at new grasses and they just went through a big regrassing project and they just spent $2 million and they just upgraded their irrigation system and they just spent $3 million on that. And every one of those things is meant to reduce the resource consumption on the property while maintaining function and expectation of the golfer. Fantastic.
Right. We're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back. All right, everybody. We got an ad here today from Audible. Could listening make you a better parent, a better leader, or even a better person? Could listening to motivating fitness programs get you fit? Could listening inspire you to start something new? I mean, I actually believe so. I listen to a lot of things that definitely get me thinking as far as meditation or golf or, you know, just new ways of thinking about what I love. There's never been a better time to start listening on Audible. With Audible, you get access to an unbeatable selection of audiobooks, including bestsellers, motivation, mysteries, thrillers, memoirs, and more. Audible has the largest selection of audiobooks on the planet. That's the entire planet. No one on the planet has more audiobooks than Audible. I mean, these are facts. That's not anecdotal. That is literally a fact. And anyway, now with Audible Originals, the selection has gotten even more custom with content made for members. Whoa, it's a country club, folks. I'm pretty sure it's not as expensive. Anyway, Dr. Joe Parent's Zen Golf Book is on Audible, and it's recorded with the voice of Dr. Joseph Parent. Chris Nashawaty's Caddyshack book is also on Audible. So those are two awesome members of the podcast that you can check out on Audible, which, you know, I'm actually going to do because I didn't read Chris Nashawaty's book because I don't have time. So I'm going to check it out on Audible probably when I get on my flight tomorrow. Anyway, Audible members can choose three titles every month, one audiobook and two Audible originals. You can't hear the Audible originals anywhere else, just on Audible. Audible members also get access to exclusive audio fitness programs to start the new year off on the right foot. Listen on any device, anytime, anywhere, at home and at the gym, or on your commute, or just on the go. You'll also enjoy easy audiobook exchanges, rollover credits, and an audiobook library that you keep forever, even if you cancel. Whoa, dudes, this sounds like an insane deal. Please check this out. Audible is the most inspiring minds and the most compelling stories. Audible, the best place to listen. Get started with a 30-day trial of Audible when you go to audible.com/Anders. That's audible.com/Anders, A-N-D-E-R-S. Or text Anders to 500-500. That's A-N-D-E-R-S to 500-500. That's actually cool. I didn't realize you could just text my name to some number called 500-500. I kind of want you to do that, and I want to see what the hell happens. Once again, you can get a 30-day trial of Audible by visiting audible.com/Anders or text Anders to 500-500. Here's the deal, guys. A lot of you ask for discount codes and whatnot for all this stuff and that stuff and golf stuff. Dude, go check out Audible. Let's make you a better person by checking out all of this awesome stuff on Audible, whether it's Zen Golf, whether it's the Caddyshack book, or whatever. You know, I might even come up with like a playlist that I can share on here, because this is something I want to get down with. Really excited to be, reading this 3-minute ad now. Anyway, all right, y'all, check it out. Anyway, it's last time, audible.com/Anders or text Anders to 500-500, A-N-D-E-R-S, 500-500, audible.com/Anders. Okay, bye. All right, everybody, time to hear from maybe what's soon to become your best friend, Blue Chew. Okay, here's the deal. Do you remember the days when you were always ready to go? I'm not talking about going to the bathroom. I'm talking about increasing your performance and getting that extra confidence. You guessed it, on the driving range. Nope, I mean in bed. Seriously, listen up. BlueChew.com. That's blue, like the color blue, not the color that your balls were before you got this wonderful. Okay, moving on. BlueChew.com brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know it's the real deal. I've tried it, and I'm afraid to say I couldn't leave the house for beep, and it's the stuff that works, exclamation point. You can take them anytime, day or night. You can even eat them in a sandwich. I'm just kidding. I haven't actually looked into that, but the point is, even on a full stomach, because they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. For example, after getting your sandwich at Chick-fil-A and you realize that maybe you were hungry for something else. That's the phone ringing, folks, but it's not Blue Chew calling me to tell me that this ad is unairable. It's someone else calling me to find out if I really use Blue Chew. Anyway, hang on, because here's the deal. This isn't just for guys with dysfunction. It's for any guy who wants extra function and to enhance their performance in the bedroom. Now, here is actually an interesting subject, because do I realize that you can always be better at something that you're not the best? Tiger Woods, for example. All right, I'm going to leave that there. I'm not going to go any further. Anyway, Blue Chew is prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package. That means that it doesn't say Blue Chew all over it, I'm going to get laid in 4 minutes. So there's no in-person doctor's visit and no waiting at the pharmacy. And best of all, no more awkwardness. Unless you eat a lot of Blue Chew before the date. Okay, moving on. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. So right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. That means you listening right now. Pull over the lawnmower, get out your pen and paper. You're going to go to BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free. Free? Wait, hang on. Free? You're going to get your first... Jeez, I'm going to text this to everybody except... Mom and Dad, please skip past this. This is embarrassing. Anyway, you're going to get your first shipment free when you use the special promo code ERIK, E-R-I-K. Don't spell my name wrong this time, folks. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's blue, B-L-U-E, chew, C-H-E-W.com. Promo code ERIK, E-R-I-K, to try it free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring the podcast. All right, folks, you know my favorite golf shoe, don't you? I think you do. It's Three Stripe Life, y'all, and that means Adidas. And so anyway, I just wanted to tell you that when I'm a big fan of the Tour 360, obviously, and they've made a huge update to the Tour 360, and the two letters that it's concerned with are the letters X and T, okay? The Tour 360 XT changes the game, okay? It's lighter, so your feet feel even better after a round. By the way, a light golf shoe is what I'm all about. A heavy, there are some other companies making heavy golf shoes, and I'm just like, by the way, I weigh enough. There's enough going on. I'm carrying a golf bag. I'm carrying my team. Tour XT changes the game. It's lighter, so your feet feel even better after a round, and it still features that Boost, y'all. Do you know where Boost comes from? And Boost is cool because it only comes in black and white. I don't know if you noticed that. And actually, the guy who made Boost like was going to bring it to some other, you know, they were shopping it around, and everyone else said no. Adidas was like, I'll take that Boost, even though it's only black and white. And what did Adidas do with it? They made it awesome. I'm looking at Boost right now on my feet. Boost on my feet. And it has an X-shaped traction system that gives you insane stability. Literally, it's not sane. It's literally crazy. Your feet will literally be like, I'm crazy. Best part, it comes in spikeless. Ooh, that's tight. The first spikeless ever in the history of the Tour 360. Crazy comfortable and perfect for the course. Get your pair at adidas.com. Thank me later. Follow Adidas Golf for all the latest and greatest. That's all true statements right there. Check it out. Go support Adidas because they're a good company, good people. All right, light it. All right, I pressed record before actually formulating a question.
No, they did.
What, I think, let's just switch gears a second. What did you hear that this couple days of the USGA Innovation Symposium that really kicked you into thought?
One of the things I heard is that one of the countries that was represented here communicates with their golfers. 70% of their golfers expect their communication to be via phone. And 68% of their golfers expect communication to be through traditional mail.
That doesn't, what?
That freaked me out. That is an aging demographic that is very old school in how they want to be communicated to. At that high of a percentage, that freaked me out.
Did you say 70 and 68? Mm-hmm. Oh, two different courses?
No, same course. They just said that that's their primary means in how they want to be communicated with.
Right. Yeah, that's very strange.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and email was like 50 something. So, I mean, that wasn't even that high.
Well, I really book tee times over the phone. I don't like going online or using apps.
How do you call?
I call.
You like to call?
Yeah, I just call because it's like, I don't know, I just want the answer right away. I know where I want to play. And I don't, maybe I'm unusual.
I don't know. There's value in actually making the call.
Yeah, I don't like looking around on the app and then I'm just like, where am I going? I don't know. I used to do the app a lot, though. I used to use apps a lot.
I think your interpretation in mind right now is probably a little bit different. I looked at, because the country that was making reference to this was a country that they know they've got a huge problem of attracting younger golfers into the market.
Which country?
The one we're in.
Japan. Mm-hmm. And, okay. And so what did you take away from that?
There needs to be a concerted effort to try to engage younger golfers.
Right.
Seriously, if paper mail is a prime communication tool to your membership, that is a membership that really is not tech. It's not even tech savvy because it's mail.
Well, I must have missed this portion, but was this one club or was it many?
No, this was the Japanese Golf Association, one of their surveys.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Cause I mean, I know some clubs do send out some mail, but yeah. Yeah, I mean, primary, it's that's...
We don't need to focus on this. That was just one thing that struck in my mind as we're thinking about player participation. You know, that was one thing that stuck in my mind.
Yeah, yeah.
The other one that was really cool was the golf course that has the windmill. You know, they're stationed right on the ocean, and the club, and they have solar roof over top of their cart storage barn. They've got wind. It was a 7-year return on investment for being able to sell the power back to the community and pay for the project. So that was a really cool.
Yeah.
Reminded me a lot of Pasatiempo and their ability to make water and then utilize it for their golf facility. But then they can make excess water too. And that's about a 10-year return on investment.
I know the story about the one with the windmill. I saw that mm-hmm. and I was like, this is really cool. I didn't know about Pasatiempo's water making ability.
Yeah. Yeah. So years ago, they have whatever the neighboring community is into the mountains, built a water treatment plant And they there's different colored pipes that are in the ground. A purple pipe is non-treated water, and it's usually meant to be discharged somewhere. So this water engineer put a purple pipe in the ground just outside of the boundaries of Pasatiempo, and it was sending that water out to the bay, because that's what you do. You send, you know, non-treated water that can't be used again back out to the bay. And the golf course found out that there's a purple pipe right by them. So let's put a T on that purple pipe, send it into the golf facility. We'll make a treatment plant there. We'll treat that water, and then we'll use it for our irrigation. So instead of me spending $1 million a year on water, let me build a $10 million water treatment plant on site. And in 10 years, I will pay for the fact that I'm not no longer having to spend $1 million a year on water.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it really is. So those sorts of innovative ideas in this golf course in Japan with the windmill and they're being able to sell back into the grid. Why not?
I've been to Pasatiempo recently and I did not see this water treatment plant. Have you visited?
I did. Yeah. And Justin is the superintendent and he is an amazing chemist, and he has to be in order to get the right treatment of that water to be able to use because of the criteria from the Department of Health in order to apply it to a golf facility that where golfers are going to interact with it. You can't have any biological materials in it. It's got to be a certain pH and it's got to have certain levels of salts, and all these things are regulated. And he essentially has to make water. He's a water maker. There you go, Justin.
He's making it rain.
Yeah, there you go.
That's absolutely unbelievable. Where is the facility?
Somewhere hole 4 or 5, right-hand side.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And then they basically pump it back around the entire golf course.
Mm-hmm.
And it works. The golf is the grass is healthy.
Beautiful. Yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, it's a great environment for golf already.
Sure.
When you come to look at California's, I live in the desert, so it's a little, it's not the most prone for grass. But are there other courses like this?
Oh, there's all kind of innovative things that are happening around the globe with golf, and anything related to the ability to save water, the ability to cut energy costs. The robotics that are now being used to mow a golf course, the innovation in sensing technology and drone technology that allow us to look for spatial anomalies on a golf course so that we can manage them in smaller units. You know, why do we manage everything uniformly when nothing is uniform?
Mm.
But we only know it's not uniform unless we study it and use sensors and technology to know it.
Right. Maybe it's more expensive. I mean, like, you know what I mean? Like,
sure.
The way I usually look at it is like, unfortunately, golf is stuck in a lot of ways because it's just expensive to be flexible.
It's expensive to try, but it's a very conservative industry too.
There you go. Yeah. It's expensive to change your mindset.
Yeah.
You know, and it is expensive to try. I mean, I wonder if that experience at Pasatiempo and other successful experiences will... You know, I mean, I don't know if the problem is that at the town hall meeting, people are turning their thumbs down at a golf course, really. What do you see as the problem?
The problem with the...
With why people are getting together in Tokyo from around the world to talk about the innovation in golf. Okay. Is there a problem?
I don't see it as a problem. I see it as the opportunity. But I see it as an opportunity for us to drive down our costs, but still provide a product. And that product is defined in the eye of the beholder. The person that doesn't play golf, there's still a product there that they can interact with and get value from. But the golfer, they have an expectation of what that product is. So if we can drive down costs and still provide the product based on the expectation of the individual, I mean, that's innovation.
Did you get some good feedback? I mean, I've never heard anything quite like this. I'm sure that there are a lot of things at this event that I've never heard that are kind of maybe people have heard of the things that you're talking about in some form or another. Were people, what was the response?
I think it was great. And there was a lot of very positive feedback. People came up and they all have their story. One of the guys that came up said, we've got 54 holes and the city council wants to close 9 of them and develop it. It would be great to understand the land use, land change component of your research on our property. So if we took 9 holes out, what would be the impact on the services that that 9 holes provided to the ecosystem? And so, yeah, I mean, that was his example of what he needed data for. You know, we're switching this whole debate on golf turf management and facilities management from it being the art of to the science of, and science is inherently then involves data. So getting more comfortable with the data, how you can interpret the data and how you can make it easily understood is where we're at right now in this industry.
Right. Yeah, because it's always been about collecting data. Are you saying that we've been collecting data in the wrong way?
No, I'm saying we've been managing our facilities without data.
Whoa, just altogether.
It was a touch and feel business. Yeah. I mean, You look out there and it's like, boy, getting a little dry.
Need a little water.
I'm going to put 10 minutes down. Well, what the heck is 10 minutes? 10 minutes means nothing to anybody except for the person that's putting 10 minutes down. I mean, think about that. 10 minutes is related to a volume of water. Is that the right volume of water? Well, how would you know that? Well, you got to know what the tank needs. What's the soil need? What's the plants need? Well, how do you know that? Well, you got to sense it and look and collect information about it.
Yeah, I wonder if I have ever even realized just how either little or how much attention goes into feeding the golf course in some way. You know what I mean?
Yeah. These superintendents are masterful at providing a product to that consumer.
Well, it just seems so normal. Cause like in Scotland, you go there and golf just happens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just walk around on it. It's basically the floor. It's dirt, it's grass. You take it completely for granted. And then now what I'm hearing is we've basically got to build Mars. We've got to build like a habitable, you know, area for a game.
We don't have to. We have.
Right.
I mean, but
in some places it won't exist without all that. You know what I mean? Like in,
certainly won't. Yeah.
In most, I would say. I wonder if that's a good question. I wonder how many golf courses demand. Is it called artificial irrigation, or just irrigation?
Just irrigation.
Mm-hmm. I wonder how many golf courses need that.
So supplementing water is required.
Always.
Mm-hmm.
Even on courses on the ocean.
There are times that the supplemental does not match the need.
Right.
But as Ben was saying today and has talked about with these short courses that are really pushing the envelopes in resource conservation strategies, where do you need that water? Do you need wall-to-wall irrigation coverage on your course, or can you just focus on those areas that have to have that little bit of extra?
Right.
And that's where I think we need to go.
So was this your first time at the USGA Summit here, the Innovation Symposium?
No, I've been fortunate. This is my third.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
How have you seen a change over the last three sessions?
Participation globally. I mean, I know we're in Japan right now, but in Vancouver, we had really good participation, but this one with our Scandinavian friends, we've got Canadian friends here, Central American friends. So there's seeing who came. I think I would like I think that the responses that I've received from people that know that I'm coming here, they've heard about it now. You know, there's enough track record in the fifth one.
Yeah.
And the USGA is using this as an opportunity to incubate as we started this and is serious about how they invest in these concepts and ideas.
That's very cool. You know, I mean, I feel so lucky to be involved, and I can tell that. You know, I mean, Rand talked about it a little bit at the end. Rand Jarrus, the historian of the USGA and the leadership committee chairman, longest title ever, but he made a joke about it, so it's not me. But, you know, just the sunset outside this Japanese hotel. I'm going to take
another picture.
Yeah, so anyway, Rand was talking about the fried nature of my brain. No, he was talking about how much they have changed as an organization over mm-hmm. the last 8 years to changing the ultimate sort of end car of their service-oriented business from the, quote, game, an esoteric idea, to the golfer, right?
Customer-focused.
Customer-focused. And so that, I think he was trying to say, is what led to the Innovation Symposium. But mathematically, I don't think that works, because if this is every other year, that's 10 years.
No, yeah. I think they're Rand and I have discussed that is now something that they've realized, that they've approached this the wrong way. How can we be the organization that we are and strive to be if our focus is on a game, not the person that's playing it? Hmm. And you got to listen to them.
Yeah.
And so having this global representation at this meeting gives everyone in that room a chance to know what's going on globally around golf.
Right. Yeah, it was very, very inspiring. And I'm looking forward to ultimately releasing the videos that we cut together in a different format. We cut them all in like one longer video. And so those will come up soon. Is there anything else you want to add? Anything you want to share or ask or discuss?
This has been great. It's been great because I'm a big believer and I'm really excited about this research and this innovation. I'm really proud to be a part of this USGA, University of Minnesota partnership and research. And I got a chance to meet a new friend, and I look forward to following what you're doing. And adventure golf is phenomenal. It's a great way to showcase all the ways that people engage in golf.
Yeah.
And it's not just the traditional.
Mm-mm.
And that's what I think is so beautiful about it.
And do you know where Kirkhoven is?
Who?
Kirkhoven's a small town in Minnesota. That's where my dad was born.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah.
Where is it?
It's in the middle. It's near
Brainerd?
No.
Mille Lacs?
No. Keep naming towns. Middle.
Cloquet?
Nope. Middle.
Oh.
I don't know. Kirkhoven, it's a small town.
Okay.
It's very small. I said that. I'm basically just repeating myself. We made a joke about robots not being able to take care of a golf course on some level, but not being able to host an innovation symposium. Yeah. I am now basically a broken robot. My cords are cut.
You are done.
Thank you for joining me, Brian. I really appreciate your time, and I'm glad you could carry this podcast.
Take care.